920.
920, approve findings to authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding requirements and authorize the use of an alternative contracting method of construction manager general contractor, and authorize a contract for the Sullivan's Crossing Bicycle and Pedestrian Bridge project for an estimated $11 million.
Commissioner Saltzman.
I will turn this over to our staff here for presentation.
Great. Thanks, Commissioner Saltzman, Mayor Wheeler, members of council. I'm Dan Layden, project manager from the Bureau of Transportation. I'm joined by Lester Spedler, the chief procurement officer. We're here to discuss our request to exempt the Sullivan's Crossing Bicycle and Pedestrian Bridge from competitive bidding in order to move forward with the solicitation for a construction manager general contractor. I'll give a brief presentation on the bridge and the project itself, and then Les will talk about the findings that we've identified. You can see on the drawing a rendering of what the bridge will look like. It is a bridge that will connect Northeast 7th Avenue across I-84 and Sullivan's Crossing from Lloyd Boulevard to the Central East Side. It's a 24-foot wide bicycle and pedestrian bridge. It's been designed by KPFF Engineering, a local Portland firm that we came to you about a year ago with a contract for. It's been widely praised for its design, both by the Design Commission and by two public open houses that we had on the project. The schedule for the project, we are currently at 60% design. If you approve our desire to go ahead with the CMGC contract, we would expect that contract to be in place by January of 2019, with construction from May of 2019 through December of 2020. The project budget, The project budget is $13.5 million. With $11 million of transportation system development charge funds and contributions from Prosper Portland, Go Lloyd, and the Central East Side Industrial District. The project has a series of complex project elements that will require, we feel, would be beneficial to have a construction management general contractor. Probably the easiest way to describe the complex project elements is that the construction will be over both Interstate 84, the Union Pacific Railway, and the Sullivan's Gulch. It requires the installation of two 300-foot-long steel arches over the railway and interstate freeway. In order for that to happen, the freeway needs to be closed. That is obviously a very challenging thing to do. We have worked with the Oregon Department of Transportation to discuss a weekend closure, but the work needs to occur very quickly during that time frame. In addition, we're also installing some drilled shafts in very close proximity to an aging large diameter sewer line. For those reasons, we feel it's important to be able to have a contractor who can work with us and work with our team during the final design phase to modify the design, to improve the constructability, and plan a very complicated construction phasing process. In addition, the other major benefit of CMGC is that the steel could potentially be purchased earlier and then with the design build project, which would reduce the price uncertainty in a very volatile market. I'm now going to turn over to Les to discuss the findings that we've come up with.
Could I ask a question before you jump off? You mentioned the question of steel, and that's been on my mind, along with everything else, apparently.
There's a lot to be on people's minds these days.
We have all these tariffs that are impacting the price of steel, plus there's a lot of competition for the existing supply, given that nationally, in fact, globally, there's an expansion boom. Are you looking at some data that gives you confidence that the price of steel is actually going to continue to go up, or are you expecting it to plateau? Or what you mentioned part of the theory behind CMGC is we can lock in today's steel prices. Is that a good thing? I really just don't know.
It is. That's the $64,000 question. I don't think anybody can really answer that with a great deal of certainty. What we have seen over the past few years, even before the tariffs took place, is that steel prices have been rising at a pretty steady rate. One of the advantages of this project is that because it is not a federally funded project, we have a little more availability in the market. We do not have to use steel that is completely produced in the United States. However, the tariffs have changed that dynamic somewhat because they are bringing those prices more competitive with U.S. steel. It's really hard to say. I think our general estimation that I've heard from the construction industry is the sooner the better. But that could very well change.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm just going to review the findings. So you're familiar with the process to exempt a construction project from the competitive low bid procurement process. So an RFP for a CMGC is not expected to discourage competition. The RFP would be a competitive solicitation where we would ask proposers to submit proposals in response to information that we request in the RFP. That usually includes experience, qualifications, project approach, and certain cost considerations for the project. And we actually expect, because of the complexities and the potential risk that a construction contractor would have in the traditional design, bid, build, delivery method, that we think that we'll get more competition by doing a qualifications-based best value solicitation. So cost savings. It is expected the cost savings will be achieved by bringing the contractor on the project team before the design is finalized. This allows the construction contractor to advise on constructability issues, which greatly reduces the number and scale of change orders and also helps to make the project construction more efficient. There will be specialized expertise in construction methods that are required. A project of this scale with as many possible complications as this one requires that the contractors be experienced and knowledgeable to ensure the project is successful. It is also critical to have cooperation between the city, our designer, and the contractor before the design is finalized. This will likely result in a faster total delivery. So a traditional design-to-build delivery method is a linear process whereby we engage a designer to fully design the project, bid it out to the construction community, and then build it. For a CMGC method, the city will be bringing the construction contractor on board prior to finalization of the design to receive their input. This method not only shortens the overall project schedule, but reduces the potential for change orders. It encourages cooperative selection of alternative products, and it promotes good communication between the city, the designer, and the contractor. Also, as noted in Dan's previous slide, by bringing the contractor on early and allowing them to start sourcing this steel, that could be an advantage to the city. Better cost control. A CMGC delivery method provides the city with better cost control by involving the contractor in the finalization of design. This allows the construction contractor to advise on constructability issues. It also affords them the opportunity to propose recommendations to the city for consideration in value engineering and different means and methods to accomplish the project. Lastly, we feel like a CMGC method would benefit the public here. The taxpayers of the City of Portland benefit from this delivery method for all the reasons previously stated. CMGC delivery method for this project will benefit the taxpayers by ensuring that the bridge is optimally designed for constructability, usability, ongoing repair and maintenance in the most cost-effective and efficient manner. So, in addition to satisfying the statutory requirements for an exemption to the low bid process, the CMGC method allows better disadvantaged minority-owned, women-owned, emerging small business enterprise participation and allows the contractor to work more closely with the city to develop, construct, and commission the bridge with more hands-on participation. The CMGC method also allows PBOT to have contract terms and conditions that stipulate DMWSB participation and provide penalties if those goals are not met. Because of the estimated amount of the project, the contract will use a community equity and inclusion plan during construction. Using that plan for this project was mandated by council last year when council established the overall community opportunities and enhancements program. And lastly, Dan Layden, myself, PBOT and Procurement Services ask that the council accept the findings and authorize exempting this project from the low bid competitive solicitation requirement and authorize the use of the CMG construction delivery method and RFP. Dan and I are happy to answer any questions.
There you have it. Can I ask you a question? Go back at the beginning of the presentation, you
sure.
Showed a graphic of the actual crossing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that as designed or just a for example, or what are we looking
that
at?
That is
there?
An artist's rendering of where the design is currently at. That is, we had a series of different options that we reviewed with the public at an open house in December and online. And this was the option that was chosen. Because of the constraints of the site, there are not a lot of choices in which how the bridge can be designed. I'm not a bridge engineer, so I can't go into great detail, but essentially the circumstance we have is on the south side of Sullivan's Gulch, we don't have any room because ODOT owns the bank and the freeway, of course. On the north side by Lord Boulevard, there's actually a fair amount of right-of-way, which is why you see that larger foundation on the north side, because we have more access to that side. ODOT has asked us to keep the south bank of the freeway clear for the potential for a future expansion of the freeway. The bridge design is sort of driven by that factor. The idea of the arch is really intended to be a very elegant sort of high-profile, landmark design. And it's been very well received by the public and by the Design Commission.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you for bringing that back up, Mayor. What are the sides made out of?
The sides?
Like the fence at the side.
So the fence will be, unfortunately, there are some requirements that we need to meet in order to meet the requirements of both the railway and the freeway. It's a wire mesh material that will provide visibility through the material, but will also prohibit or prevent people from throwing items onto the bridge, and will also deter the ability of people to be able to climb the bridge.
That was my question.
Yeah.
It's
we're still working on the details of that, but that's definitely a major concern.
Yeah, I think there's a challenge between making it so that people can't climb it versus making it graffiti-proof. So I'm
right.
You're considering
and making
both
it transparent. And yeah. That's definitely been in our thoughts.
Okay, so I'll say the same thing I said the other day when you were talking about another CMGC exemption. I've been doing a lot of reading on this subject because I am not a procurement expert on large capital construction projects, and CMGC seems to be very much in favor right now on large capital construction projects. But what is less clear as you read the literature out there on this subject is whether or not it actually saves you money. What it all does is it hedges, and it says it has the potential to save money, provided that you're highly engaged, highly accountable, and you really push hard at the beginning of the process with your construction partners to make sure that the estimates that are being provided are actually realistic estimates as opposed to cushioned estimates.
Right.
And so what I'm hoping we do, given that we now have several CMGC projects lined up, I would like us to keep our own data pool. I would like us to evaluate internally. I'm happy to make the exception here. It makes sense conceptually. But I'd actually like to know, are we really saving any money with CMGC over the conventional procurement methodology? And I'd also like more information nationally, what we are learning about CMGC, given that there are more and more projects that are being procured under this methodology. I mean, it's almost as though CMGC is becoming the norm as opposed to the exception. Mm-hmm. And so I just personally, as one member of the council where we have to make this decision to allow the exemption, I'd like a little more data and a little more fact in terms of whether this is really the right thing for us to be doing or not.
We can certainly compile
great.
That over time.
Thank you.
Sure.
Anything else? Public testimony, Sue?
We've had two people sign up.
Very good.
Please come up, Gene Connett and Charles Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Superintendent, first, I go first. Let's talk about Charles Bridge Grant Johnson, for the record, no relation to this particular bridge. And there's tower. It's actually more of a tower crane conversation. Who can believe that we have a tower crane, I think, in Sullivan's Gulch near Northeast 20th, just across I-84. And in addition to the mayor's important suggestion that we become better at data analysis about these CMGC exemptions, and I just want to remind us that construction manager, general contractor exemption or change from the regular purchasing process, I hope that the mayor will go even further and kind of create a working group or task force to maybe work with the chief purchasing officer, kind of report back on the effectiveness of this. Is it really improving our ability to engage small business, women and minority contractors, or is it just something that gives a little bit of a paperwork advantage to some GCs or whatever? So I want to talk about the larger scope of the project in the equity lens and gentrification, because it somewhat makes sense that an expensive, possibly $11 million bridge would not be created in an area that's just treading water or stagnating. But when we look at overall expenditures in community development in Portland, we want to make sure really that we're not letting the developer tail wag the dog. There's one project, I think, going in this vicinity where that tower crane is. Those people paying perhaps above market rents are getting the advantage of this $11 million amenity. So when we look at the overall PBOT budget, we want to make sure that there's an inclusion. Some great things have happened. The Gateway Discovery Park around 105th. And so I think we're doing a good job. But as has been emphasized, we should look at metrics so that when somebody says, oh, the Lloyd Mall is failing and you tried to save it with an $11 million pedestrian bridge, we can all say, that's not exactly why. But even if you think that's why, look at the great things we've done at Gateway Greenway and other more remote locations that aren't inside inside Cesar Chavez Boulevard. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jan Canette, and my concern here is where the money goes. As far as I'm concerned, why don't you take that money, tell all the homeless people, here's this spot, and here's all the wood and all the material you need to make a little tiny house. Because I don't like the reputation. The hardest part for me was when some rock star said, if you want to go to a living sewer, go to Portland, Oregon. Now, I'm from St. John's. We had our own police force, and so, we didn't have to bother with Portland police and stuff like that. And I miss it terribly. But I think that the policing and getting to know neighborhoods is a really, really good idea instead of just gobbling them up as they did to St. John's. So my concern is where the city money goes. And we're nationally known for our homelessness. I mean, it's all over the place about how bad Portland is. Okay, well, you took my hometown, so I'm supposed to say I'm from Portland. But if you want me to say I'm from Portland, you guys are going to have to really step it up and pay attention to what's going on in Portland and deal with that, because that is the most important thing right now going on in this state and city. Okay, that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And I just want to apologize. When we talk about Sullivan's Gulch, we should recognize it goes all the way out practically to Gateway, and that there are probably hundreds of our houseless neighbors sleeping there. So I think we all need to take a look and see what's in the city joint office of homeless, the city's budget, the joint office of homeless, to make sure that those people are getting the assistance at removing their trash and maintaining the best quality of life you can when there's no homes for you.
Thank you. Very good. Please call the roll.
Saltzman.
Well, this is a very exciting project, and I appreciate the mayor's questions about construction management general contracting process. It does seem to have become the norm in how we procure things these days for large capital projects. And I would remind all of us that it has benefits. I think it does, and I think this is why it has become more favored. It does tend to reduce the level of adversarialness that develops often when you do a low bid construction project. There's often subsequent change orders and litigation that I think is minimized in the construction management general contractor process, although I think that bears that bears further scrutiny. And it does give us more latitude because we are doing a request for proposal as opposed to a low bid document. It does give us more latitude to be more diligent about making sure that minority women and emerging small business subcontractors or contractors are involved in the project, and we can be more demanding of our partners in that regard. Having said that, I am very pleased to support this exciting project. Aye.
Udaly.
Well, thank you, Mayor, for raising your concerns about the CMG issue. I will be looking closely at that as well, as I am set to inherit this sizable bureau. Thanks, I guess. No, just kidding. I'm really excited to learn more about transportation and to dig into all of this. I want to acknowledge the frustration expressed by a community member about money being spent on something that seems less essential, certainly, than housing. But I do want to explain that these funds are coming from sources that we cannot allocate to housing. PBOT funds are coming from the transportation system development charge revenue. We can't simply reallocate that to housing. And my apologies, I'm not clear on where the Prosper, which pot of money the Prosper Portland funds are coming from, but it is very likely that those are also strictly delegated. So I hear you. I just wanted to clarify that. I vote aye.
Prince.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I think this is a great project, and I appreciate everybody who's worked so hard on this, the Transportation Bureau, Commissioner Saltzman, your team. It's a great vision. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.